right, we're back on the Fan Morning Show.
Bum, 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 bum.
There we Friday.
Go. I'm awake.
The vibes are good. It's 7 o'clock. The coffee shop in the office is now open, so getting Haley some caffeine. It's a Friday. We got Haley joining us on the show. Justin Cuthbert's away on vacay in Costa Rica, living up the life. And we're here grinding. We appreciate you coming in, Haley. We got Haley today, and we got Haley Monday, and then Brent Gunning joining us for the rest of the week to fill in. Coming off a Maple Leafs win last night, a big one against the Florida Panthers, and Matthew Nyes stepping further into the Frozen Four journey with Minnesota, a guy that covers them both. Stephen Ellis, associate editor and prospect analyst at DailyFaceoff.com, a host of the Puck Poolies podcast. What a name. How's it going, Stephen?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
We're doing well. I know you're up late watching some Frozen Four, Matthew Nyes in Minnesota. I'll tell you this. I was watching thinking, this is it. Canisius is going to have this massive win. And then they find a way to, the scoreboard looks a little bit lopsided in the end. But you were watching that one, I assume, pretty close. What can we take away from the first game for Toronto's very own Matthew Nyes?
Well, that would have been quite the upset because looking at the rankings, Minnesota number one and Canisius number 42.
Yeah.
So that would have been
minus 800 on the money line, too. It was crazy.
Yeah, that would have been quite something. But that top line didn't really do a whole lot until the second half of that game. But once they got moving, it was pure dominance. The Canisius couldn't keep up. And Minnesota's one of the best college teams I think we've ever seen. In quite a long time. They've just got so much depth, so much talent. And you look at that top line where Nyes didn't get a goal, but it didn't seem to matter. He still played an effective game. So that was one heck of a contest.
So we only really know, I guess, the high level Matthew Nyes in terms of this team. But Minnesota has some depth up front, and he plays on that top line. But there's a lot of superstars, obviously, going through the NCAA pathway here towards the Frozen Four. Who else on that team is impressive? I mean, we're obviously going to keep our eyes on it a little bit closer now as we see when Matthew Nyes will make his trip to Toronto. But he works in tandem with a couple other pretty great guys.
Yeah, Logan Cooley, to me, is one of the best prospects in hockey right now. Arizona player. He put out some outstanding moves last night, got a couple of assists. And then you look at Jimmy Snuggerud, who's one of the best pure snipers.
Too.
Oh, outstanding name. There's another player in this tournament named Winter Wallace. That's a great name, too. But yeah, we get some good names in college hockey. But yeah, Jimmy Snuggerud is awesome. He's going to be great for St. Louis. And again, that line probably could be a second line in most NHL teams right now.
So one conversation Ailish and I were having, you know, earlier in the show in the last hour, it's kind of been a debate in Leafs land is, you know, wanting Matthew Nyes to be in Toronto as soon as possible. When this game looked like it was going to be an upset last night, there was maybe some fans getting excited that they could see Nyes sooner rather than later. Of course, they stay alive. They stay in the tournament. Like, what is the benefit, Stephen, in your opinion, of Matthew Nyes, you know, staying in the NCAA this season and, you know, going as far as he can in this NCAA tournament?
When it comes to prospects, especially high-end ones, I think the biggest thing is confidence. And if you can go here and win a national championship, especially after losing your you know, divisional championship, but a tough loss there to Michigan, getting that confidence and showing like, yep, this guy, like, this is the best you could play. This is everything you could do. And getting to win that championship that you've been working for all that time, I think is very important because, you know, there's a very realistic chance he can come to the Leafs and not play a lot right off the bat. And then that could, you know, make some doubts in his mind. But going out there and winning the championship, to me, whatever, it doesn't matter what level it is for any prospect, that's extremely valuable.
Yeah, there's so much pride in representing your school and being able to be a Frozen Four champion. Like, I don't know how much people understand that. And I think it's just a great boost of confidence. And that was his decision to come back, so might as well go out with a bang. So Matthew Nyes has a couple more hopeful opportunities here to get a little bit closer. But eventually, he will come to Toronto and he will sign with the Maple Leafs and he'll get an opportunity to make his debut. Now, whether that's next week or a little bit after that, where's he strongest suited to join this Maple Leafs roster with the factor that he's going to have little to no time to acclimate with this roster? And there's already some holes with Ryan O'Reilly not really suited in a spot right now. We don't know how this is going to shake out. You know, the first couple days or games, where do you see Matthew Nyes fitting in this roster?
I think they'll give him, given that the team right now is kind of just focused more on trying different lines out and seeing what they could do as opposed to just winning every game outright. I think they're going to give them as many opportunities in that top six to just, you know, play quality players, get your confidence up, and then maybe come playoff time, we're talking maybe second, third line. You know, I don't think offensively he's going to blow anyone's mind away, but the value there is his two-way play, his physical play. It's like the Leafs don't have a guy like him. He just plays this power forward game that I don't think anyone really brings to this roster. So you can fit him in a lot of roles, but you know, I think they'll give him some first line time just to get him ready. But I don't think he's going to last there.
Yeah, that's certainly a significant spot to slot in on the first line of the Toronto Maple Leafs. But you know, obviously he's got those skill sets, and the further he gets in his NHL career, the more he develops. I wonder the fact that we know the Maple Leafs will play the Tampa Bay Lightning, we've known for a little while, if that first round matchup changes your perspective of where Matthew Nyes will slot in. Is there some sort of, you know, line pairing or matching or the way that Tampa Bay plays offensively and defensively that makes you shift where you would put Matthew Nyes if he was playing a Boston Bruins team?
I don't know. I think because, again, we just got to see what he's able to do against the NHL quality. Like, you know, going out there and playing the NCAA is one thing, but adjusting to the pro lifestyle, you're not playing just a game or two a week. Now you're playing almost every other night, and you've got you're ramping up that competition. So I think you're still just, no matter what, are spending the next couple weeks just trying to ease him in.
Obviously, there's a ton of, you know, draft-eligible players to watch at this tournament. You know, NHL prospects, one that I've kind of circled is Adam Fantilli. He's one of the big draft-eligibles at NCAAs with Michigan. How has he progressed since World Juniors in your mind, Stephen?
Fantilli, to me, is one of the best prospects we've seen in quite a long time. He's big. He can be physically dominant. He can control the puck. He shoots well. He just does everything. And, you know, the numbers he was putting up this year were on pace to be better than guys, well, pretty much what we've ever seen from a player at that level. You know, Jack Eichel is considered like the gold standard of NCAA freshman seasons, and from a points per game perspective, we saw better out of Fantilli. He just didn't play as many games, but I think, you know, the way he can dominate there is, the World Juniors wasn't a great performance for him, but I don't think that was indicative of what he could do. He was playing bottom line minutes. He was playing on the wing instead of center where he usually plays. So, you know, he played like you'd expect from a draft eligible player. Connor Bedard just kind of did some special stuff that made it look a little silly in comparison, but I still think he's the second best prospect out there right now.
It's hard to stack up when Connor Bedard is doing what Connor Bedard was doing at that World Junior tournament. But looking at Fantilli in the NCAA season he's put together, I mean, he had the third highest points per game rate in the NCAA this season in the last 20 years, you know, behind guys like Johnny Gaudreau, who had 2 points per game when he won the Hobie, and then 2016 runner-up Kyle Connor from a couple of years ago. Like, is he the shoe-in to win the Hobie Baker this year?
He would have my pick. You know, just we don't see guys dominate like that, especially in a first-year player, and he's I've been able to watch him kind of when he grew up the Toronto hockey rank, seeing how what he was able to do here, and you could always see the special qualities in him. And I think the fact that, you know, Connor Bedard is also in this draft is tough, but Fantilli would be a number one in most other drafts.
So the draft obviously is Bedard and co, and we've been seeing that for quite a while, but I wonder how you see that next four shaking out, because there's been a lot of movement. And I think that that's the most intriguing part of this. We know that number one is the tank for Bedard, but number two, three, and four, there's a lot of depth in this draft. I wonder how you see it, like right now, Friday, March 24th, if you were the one drafting, where you might see some of these prospects lining up.
Well, yeah, obviously Bedard's number one. I think if I'm looking long-term, I do think Matvei Michkov ends up becoming the second best player in this draft.
What about that KHL contract? Does that put any pause?
That's the problem. That's why it's going to take a while. I think certain teams might take a run at him. Like if Montreal stays fifth with their second pick a couple picks later, I think Montreal can make a run at him. If Chicago falls outside of the top two or three, they could do it because they just have a stupid number of picks. So I think, you know, the right team will go for him, but I think he's going to be outstanding. Then you look at Fantilli, he's great. Number four, Leo Carlson, was putting up a ton of points in the Swedish Pro League. So that's something you can't ignore. And then Zach Benson, a number five, you know, a guy who's about as close to catching Bedard in the WHL as possible. So it's a very, very strong top five this year.
you know, looking back at the NCAA tournament here, Stephen, is there anyone else that we need to know? Because obviously we haven't covered a ton, and there's several players playing in this tournament. Matthew Nyes, obviously, is of interest to Leafs fans. Fantilli, obviously, from Team Canada at the World Juniors. Who else do you think that we need to be aware of as this tournament continues, either NHL prospects or draft eligibles?
Well, Gavin Brindley, who plays with Fantilli, just played at under a point per game all season long. You know, he's a smaller player at 5'9", but he's feisty, he's skilled, and we saw him play some really good hockey at the World Juniors. And Luke Mittelstadt, the younger brother of Casey Mittelstadt, also on Minnesota, last night was probably the best player on that team until Logan Cooley did what Logan Cooley does at the end. And, you know, a defenseman that just kind of a late bloomer, but sometimes you see guys like that really start to shine. So I'd say those are the ones I'm keeping the closest eye on.
Last one, Frozen Four. Who's going to win?
I think it's going to be Minnesota. I think, yeah.
Hell
sorry,
yeah.
Leafs fans. Nyes is going the way.
All right. We heard it here first. Okay. Let's move on to your last article on dailyfaceoff.com. Of course, we're talking to Stephen Ellis. You wrote about Connor McDavid and his comments about the best on best international hockey and how it needs to return, obviously inspired by the WBC and what we saw in that final out, at least between Shohei and Mike Trout. And it was, you know, once in a lifetime, really, to see that happen. And that tournament in general, I think, stole hearts around the world of what it's like to watch teams be represented by passionate players. Now, moving forward, looking at what Connor McDavid said about we'd love to have this here, what were your initial thoughts watching that tournament and hearing the best player in the world make a statement that this needs to happen? Is that enough? Is that enough momentum to actually have the NHL make that step forward?
Well, we've heard rumors that the GMs are on board of this. And then obviously you just look, it's the NHL and the owners who are not. But I'm happy to see, anytime I hear a player speak out about something like that, I'm happy to hear that because, you know, I'm a huge fan of international hockey. I'll watch any level. I've been watching the Division IV men's tournament and very excited for the women's tournament coming up in Brampton. But, you know, just like, best on best international hockey is something that shouldn't be so hard to find. And, you know, it was obviously at the World Baseball Classic. It was a while between those two tournaments, mm-hmm. but I think just kind of seeing the momentum of that, and then seeing the World Cup of Soccer, and like, I'm not a soccer fan, but just seeing how cool and how big it was just to see Canada in there. It'd be cool to be able to see people get that excited about hockey again. And, you know, when your NHL team is out of the playoffs, you probably don't care as much. But when you've got, you know, the country you live in, the country you grew up in, playing for a medal, I think that just hits completely differently. So I hope it's something that comes back. I get the reasons why. You know, Russia's obviously another reason why we're not going to see best-on-best hockey for a bit, even if they did play without them. But it's just like, we've had so many great memories of previous Olympics, and even the 2016 World Cup of Hockey was a ton of fun. I just want to see that magic recreated.
I mean, there's been a whole generation of, you know, superstars in the NHL who have not represented their country at like a major international competition. And I think it's just such a shame. I was looking back at the last Canadian Olympic roster, 9 players are still active. Only 9. Everyone else is, mm-hmm. you know, just retired or on LTIR, stashed away the Arizona Coyotes somewhere. And I guess it's just like, I wonder what it's going to take for the NHL to kind of figure it out. Obviously, we know that the Olympics are the issue. The IOC are the ones that, you know, get the immediate financial gain from NHLers going to the Olympics. But I think the NHL, like, if they think that they're above growing the game and just getting that exposure at that stage, I mean, they're wrong. You know, we know that people being at these tournaments are going to inspire or introduce the sport. It's going to make new hockey fans. And I just don't think that the NHL should think that they're above trying to grow the game in that sense, because we know that the NHL is pretty far behind when we're comparing it to the NBA, MLB, and the NFL.
Yeah, if there's any league that knows how to not grow their game internationally, it's definitely the NHL. But, you know, you look at, I think when you see guys like Ohtani and you see guys like Trout playing in a tournament like that, and especially in a season in a sport that just takes forever, where over 100 games you're playing, and it's just ridiculous how many games you play, to see them playing that still, you know, put that extra pressure on there of the potential to get hurt. You know, I don't think that excuse is real anymore for the NHL. You got to say, you know, all these other sports let their best athletes go and take part in these major events. And whether that league has a stake in it or not, I still think there's value in just showcasing these players to the rest of the world, because, you know, for the game to continue to grow, and, you know, it's not the NHL's job to grow the game in like Europe and places like that. That's more of what the IIHF has to do. But you've got to grow the game where people are going to care about it no matter what. And you've got these good opportunities. The players want to be part of it. It's one thing if McDavid and Crosby said, I don't want to play in these extra events, but they want to be there. Mm-hmm. Make that happen.
So the poster would have been Ohtani versus Trout. If you're looking at the head-to-head that you most wanted to see in the World Baseball Classic, you're making the poster for the next head-to-head with the NHL superstars. Who are the two faces that you have to draw in the viewers?
Oh, it has to be McDavid and Matthews, you know, two of the best players in the world right now.
I would buy that poster and I would frame it and I would tune in, because that sounds absolutely electric. Let's ask you a couple of Leafs questions before we let you go, Steven. So the biggest conversation as of late have been the line shufflings and the movement of 7-11 and 11-7 and seeing new bodies in and out of the lineup. Now, how do you see this shaking out down the stretch? Are you seeing like positive results at finding answers and having chemistry hopefully born out of chaos? And are you in the camp of let's end that, let's set some lines and let's see them work?
Yes and no. I'm looking at this and saying, like, obviously we know they're making the playoffs. We know who their first round opponent's going to be, and it's been like that for a long time. So this is the perfect time to kind of just try different things. Like, I expect near the end of the regular season, we're going to probably see guys like Matthews, maybe even Marner, just sit for a few games like we've seen in the past, just to make sure they're ready to go. And it doesn't hurt to try different things out. You know, the thing that to me that this team really lacked in the previous couple of years in the playoffs was just the pure depth. They have that now, where I'd even argue they've got goaltending depth for the first time in a while too. So at every position, they've got guys to go back and lean on. And that's something, you know, even Tampa Bay can't necessarily say for the most part to the extent that the Leafs have. So yeah, you know, there's been some ugly games, and the game against the Islanders was extremely bad, but I still like that they're trying different things, knowing that this is the time to try it, so that when it comes down to game seven, you need something to pull it out of the hat. You've got these lines or these other things you've tried in the past to see, you know, maybe this could work.
Game one of the playoffs, Steven.
What's the big question?
Ailish and I were debating who's, you know, should be the opening day starter for the Blue Jays. Is it Gausman or is it Alek Manoah? But if we're looking at Leafs and we're looking at the goaltending picture and who gets the start on day one, game one of the playoffs, is it Matt Murray or is it Ilya Samsonov?
You know, Samsonov's highs this year have just been better. And I don't want to say, oh, like, look at Murray's injury history, but I just don't really have a ton of confidence in him. I do have a lot of confidence in Samsonov. And I think, you know, he's in a single game situation, like, you got to win. I think this is a guy who can rise to the occasion right now.
Especially if it's home ice, because we know Samsonov loves to cook at home.
One on home and one in away.
Matt Murray's the away goalie. Mm. And Samsonov is the home goalie.
Hey, whatever gets you a win, Haley, honestly.
The one concern I would have about going with Samsonov as the starter is I wonder what that would do to Matt Murray's confidence. Wouldn't you want to start that guy out on a high in the postseason?
I'm kind of on the camp that I expect them to buy him out next year. So I'm kind of just like, at this point, I don't know if I care.
Okay.
All right. If Matt Murray had successfully made that save last night, you think we'd be talking differently? We'd be starting game one. He'd be leading the team to Stanley Cup. I mean, that was pretty, pretty nice. Like, I just wish that the puck hadn't crossed the line a little bit in his glove. But, I mean, it was pretty nice. So that's the highs and lows of covering this team. Steven, we appreciate you joining us this morning. Enjoy covering the rest of that NCAA tournament. We'll probably chat with you afterwards and see how it all shook out, and appreciate your bet on Minnesota. I think that you're on it with that one, number one Minnesota going all the way, and I hope to see it for Matthew Nyes.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Steven Ellis, Associate Editor and Prospect Analyst at DailyFaceoff.com and host of the Puck Coolies podcast. Of course, you can find all that. Check out his Twitter feed as well. He was covering some NCAA stuff last night. Minnesota getting the big win over Canisius after headed into the third period down 2-1. So they found a way. Matthew Nyes continues on his college career. And we get to continue waiting patiently or not patiently in Toronto to see him put on a Maple Leafs jersey. I wonder what number he's going to be. I was just thinking about that. There's like no numbers left if you're a Maple Leafs player, because all of them are retired. Yeah. you're going to end up with like 53. Somebody already has that probably, right? Like, it's just pick an obscure number that's in like the 50 to 60 range or 40, because at that point, you're not getting 17, 11. Like, there's no nice numbers left.
67.
Oof. I haven't won since.
Oh, I didn't mean to.
You legitimately cannot pick that number.
I didn't mean to do that.
But how hilarious would that be if Matthew Nyes comes and he wears number 67 and everyone just blows up?
He wore 23 in development camp, but.
Oh, it's not terrible, actually. 20s are acceptable. There's some good numbers there. Like 27, my number, but retired. Okay, aside from something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
Now, this one's for you, Haley.
It's my favorite segment.
This is for you. Ezekiel Elliott narrowed down his list. Look at your face. I wish
Tell
you could
me
see.
More.
Your face is radiant. He's narrowed down his list of potential teams to the Eagles, the Jets, and your very own Cincinnati Bengals.
Right.
Now, he was released by Dallas last week. He's only 27 years old, according to Adam Schefter. He's hoping to make his decision sometime next week. Now, you are a massive, massive Bengals fan.
Yes.
What would that be like to have Ezekiel Elliott say, my decision is the Cincinnati Bengals?
I mean, it's obviously a huge pickup. I think if you're a Bengals fan and you're looking at that team, you know, obviously you've got so many good offensive weapons on that roster already. So Ezekiel Elliott would, you know, just add a nice little element to that roster. I do think that the Bengals need more O-line help because Joe Burrow just takes a beating daily basis. So, you know, I hope that if they grab Ezekiel Elliott, that doesn't, you know, stop them financially, you know, in a cash perspective from going out and, you know, addressing the biggest issue, which is that O-line. But it's interesting, like Joe Burrow was at Ohio State when Zeke was there. So there's a little bit of a connection. I'll be curious to see where he ends up choosing. I mean, obviously the Eagles, I mean, that would be, how do you go from the Cowboys to the Eagles?
Man, that's tough. That's a lot of fire there.
That would be like going from the Penguins to the Flyers.
Yep. I think even more explosive in terms of a move.
That would be like if Marc-Andre Fleury signed with the Washington Capitals or something in free agency.
Yeah, that's pretty similar. All right, well, something to chew on there, Haley. I hope you get your wish. I really want to see you have some joy in your life.
Yeah, there's been zero joy as a Bengals fan.
It's been tough,
A proud Bengals fan since 2020.
Hey, you know what? You picked a good one to jump on the bandwagon for.
I don't care. There's nothing wrong with jumping on the bandwagon.
Everyone's got to start somewhere. You don't come out of the womb wearing a Bengals jersey, right? Like, of course.
No, I'm from Fergus, Ontario.
Fergus.
I'm from Cincinnati.
Yeah, that's right. We have some more NFL stuff to break down with Charles Davis, the joy of our Fridays. He's back today at 8:30 because Lamar Jackson's contract just got, the whole situation has been a bit
I need someone to break that down for me.
But yesterday, there's some news coming out that a mysterious man, this is literally the wording. A mysterious man named Ken Francis was reaching out to teams on Lamar Jackson's behalf, so much so that the NFL had to send a memo to all of the clubs letting them know that this Ken Francis dude is not an NFLPA certified agent, and he might be trying to contact teams and try to persuade them to discuss negotiations with Lamar Jackson. And there's going to be fines on the table. You cannot speak to Ken Francis, whoever the hell this guy is. And they had to send a formal thing to the league. And then Lamar is quote tweeting it saying like, anyway, I don't want to break it down too much for you, but some man named Ken Francis is doing some shady stuff on behalf of Lamar Jackson. We're going to try to break all that down with our buddy Charles Davis at 8:30. Also talk about his poor Tennessee guys out of the NCAA Sweet 16 last night. I wanted to come on. We booked him before we knew the result of the game, and unfortunately, they're out. But we'll try to console him as he is the joy of our Fridays. Wake and Rake will be after that at 8:45. So send in your picks at 5:90, 5:90. You got Raptors and Pistons tonight. More Sweet 16 and some NCAA Frozen Four as well to tee up. We hit the Wake and Rake last night. Let's keep it going on your Friday. On the other side of the break, we're going to tee up MLB opening day starters being announced today. A league-wide announcement is happening. Who's going to be the Toronto Blue Jays starter? Julie Kreutz is joining us on the other side of the break. We'll see what she thinks.
diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The JD Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Justin Cuthbert away on vacay for the next little while. So we got Haley Salavian joining us today and Monday. You can catch Haley on her own show, Hockey Central, from 4 to 5 p.m. That's on 960. And, of course, a writer for The Athletic, killing it out there. She's got just a way with words. Me, not so much. I have actually invented a word. I don't know if you there was a word that I said on the radio a couple weeks ago, and we've actually now added it to the Dictionary of Ailish. Exuberation.
Oh.
I'll talk about it later. You like it, though, eh?
Yeah.
It's exuberant and elation together.
Okay.
So maybe one day you get a chance to put that in your article. No problem. You can credit me.
I don't think that would pass.
There'd be the squiggly line underneath for sure.
Desk.
But you can explain.
What happened?
I'll give you the definition and you can have it.
Okay. I appreciate
because
you.
Because there might be some exuberation in this Blue Jays season, and somebody is going to feel it when they're named opening day starter, which will be today. The MLB doing a worldwide rollout of all of their opening day starters. We both have our opinion on who it should be. Let's talk to Julia Kreutz, Blue Jays reporter at MLB.com. Julia, how's it going? It's been a while since we chatted. Welcome back to the fold. Blue Jays baseball is right around the corner.
Certainly has been a while. Thank you so much for having me back. Good morning to you guys, and we'll see if we can sneak in exuberation in there.
Perfect. You know, you're a writer, so I'm giving you guys the opportunity to add the word from Ailish's dictionary in there. So today's a special day because, you know, the MLB is doing something a little different, rolling out their opening day starters, which I think is really fun. It's different. It's a good way to get everyone engaged and on the same page in the same day. But if you're the Blue Jays, who are you awarding that honor to?
Yeah, certainly different, and I would agree that it is a sort of a fun way to tackle this. We know that there is a lot of lore, right, around the opening day starter, and so to do something and turn this into a mini event on a Friday, I'm honestly all for it. As for the Blue Jays, as we know, the Blue Jays right now have one of the best projected starting rotations in the American League. Don't think you can go wrong with either Kevin Gausman or Alek Manoah. I'm sure that there are differing opinions on this, but when you look at their track record, when you look at what they've done with the Blue Jays so far, you really cannot go wrong with either of those guys. If you look back to history, you know, with the postseason last year, Alek Manoah getting the start in game one of the wild card series, that can be an indicator. Just the way that the guys are positioned right now in spring training to pitch can also be another indicator. But honestly, it's anyone's game at this point. It will be an interesting one to follow today.
Let me give you my pitch for Alek Manoah, because I'm all over it this year. I want Alek Manoah to start today, or today. I want him to be announced today for opening day starter because of that playoff performance. Now, I think that does a lot for a player in terms of putting a little bit of maybe pressure on the mental side of the game. This offseason, I know he worked extremely hard on his fitness, but also having to deal with kind of that performance, I'm sure, weighs heavily on a young guy. I think it's giving him the opportunity to show that was a blip, to give him a boost of confidence coming in. I feel like being the opening day starter means a lot more to the player than it does to anyone else. And he's a guy that's going to ride a lot of wave of confidence this year. So you put him in there, you give him the opportunity to kind of bounce back in a sense from that playoff start. I think it's going to mean a lot to him. And Kevin Gausman is already the vet. We know what he has. We know that he's going to be a key member of this rotation. But what can Alek Manoah do to prove that, you know, last year, the way that this playoff season, the moment wasn't too big for him, which is a conversation we all had. The moment might have been too big for Alek Manoah. I think giving him that opening day starter is a great boost of confidence. Haley was kind of on the other side, the devil's advocate. But I see I see the legitimacy between both arguments. And I think the bigger picture, as you put it, is they have a great problem because they got at least 2, 3, 4 guys. Maybe Kikuchi should be starting. I mean, the world is your oyster if you're the Blue Jays pitching staff.
Yeah, absolutely. And the strategy starts now, right? The planning and the tinkering, it's all in the works already. So whoever we see pitching on opening day, there are certainly more aspects of it that go into that decision than honestly you and I will ever know, because we're just not in the room for those conversations. But you do bring up a great point. Alek Manoah did struggle in that postseason start, and this is a guy that is a homegrown product. He is very young, and the Blue Jays are still very much building him up. There's still development. You know, you think about a third place Cy Young winner or a Cy Young vote winner last year, and you just, it's interesting to think that there is still development to be had here. There's still growth for Alek Manoah. And so what will that do, or what would that do for him to get the nod, to get that honor? That's a fascinating aspect of it as well. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think that I personally would choose Kevin Gausman because of his veteran status and just because of what he's represented to the game of baseball and you know, just the fact that he was sort of that stabilizing presence in that wild card series last year. But at the same time, if I'm the Blue Jays, I am taking a very good look at Alek Manoah and what that does to his confidence, how that sets up the rotation, and just what the honor means to a young guy that, you know, got his start with the Blue Jays.
They have a ton of stuff to kind of balance there, as you just mentioned, Julia. And thank you, because, you know, it's not fun when we all agree on the same thing. So I am kind of leaning in on the Gausman
wagon. Hey,
we'll chat
wagon, on Monday when it's announced.
Sure.
And it's Manoah.
Fine. Yeah, just like hop on the Gausman train. We're rolling. I mean, Manoah has the numbers and like the better season from last year, but Gausman has been an opening day starter before in 2017 and in 2021.
He's, I believe, done it was with it the, already. He's,
exactly, Share though. Don't alone. You want that? You want someone who's been there, done that before. Mm-hmm. Anyways, my question for you, Julia, when it comes to this, and either when it comes to, you know, pitching, guys you're looking at in the batting order, the outfield, whatever it may be, like, how much weight do you put into Grapefruit League and kind of spring training, like when you're watching the preseason and you're tracking the Blue Jays, like when we see Yusei Kikuchi like throwing some heat yesterday, like how much can we take away from this?
With a guy like Kikuchi, I think you can take away a whole bunch from this. We all know, we're very aware that, you know, spring training is about much more than results, and you're not necessarily just looking at numbers, but you're also looking at guys' ability to stay healthy and to run the bases, and how are they dealing with, you know, the new rules this year. There's so much more that goes into spring training than simply the end results. But the fact is that Kikuchi, from the first start of Grapefruit action till yesterday with 9 strikeouts over 5 innings, he has looked like a confident pitcher. So beyond the stellar numbers here and the fact that his stuff is playing really, really well, is the confidence. And that's something that has been highlighted before. It was certainly talked about last year, in which he lost that a little bit along the way. It was a mental thing for Yusei Kikuchi a lot of the time, more so than simply, you know, he's not getting guys out. There was that, certainly. But there was also the fact that his mental side didn't seem to be all there. So if he can carry that into the regular season, that will make all the difference for the Blue Jays. And he does seem to be in a different headspace. Again, when the lights shine a little brighter, we can go back to, you know, Manoah in the postseason, or we can go back to, speaking of opening day, to Jose Barrios last year. Things tend to play out differently, for sure. But the fact is that Yusei Kikuchi, when he is locked in mentally, he is a left-handed pitcher who throws 97, 98, and who has a nasty slider. So what do you do with that, right, as the opposing team? And to see him keep that consistency throughout the month of March is extremely encouraging for the Blue Jays. And now it's all about finding a way to keep that going into the regular season.
So you mentioned Jose Barrios, and between him and Kikuchi, those were maybe the biggest points of emphasis as a fan and as someone covering the game, obviously, in terms of that starting rotation. Now, Jose Barrios has had an off season with a lot of tweaks, a lot of changes, and now a ramping up period, which included him going to the WBC. So I wonder where you're at with Jose Barrios and maybe where he might slot in this rotation, and if there's still any hesitation or any pause when you look at what he's done this off season and where he's at right now.
Yeah, it seems like he will be, or he should be in my mind, the number 4 guy here, right? So you have Chris Bassett coming in, and whoever from Alek Manoah or Kevin Gausman is one or two, I would imagine that Chris Bassett is going to be the number three guy in this rotation. And Jose Berríos, because of sort of his struggles last year, he would slide in at number four. There is, when you listen to, say, Ross Atkins or John Schneider or even Berríos himself, honestly, there is no hesitation. There is no pause. People around the organization really do believe that last year was a blip, and it's all about sort of rediscovering himself, regaining his confidence, and, you know, just coming out strong in the regular season. And this is not unheard of, right? Guys have had blip years before, and Berríos has had the time to build his own track record in this game and to earn this trust from the Blue Jays that he will bounce back. And so far in spring training, he has shown certainly flashes of that, if not the whole time. You know, you can turn to his World Baseball Classic outing and say, okay, well, this is the Berríos that we saw last year. He got beaten around a little bit. But with the Blue Jays in Grapefruit League, he's been doing well. So there's a lot to consider when it comes to a guy like Berríos. Again, he himself last year spoke about the mental side a bunch, and now you have to sort of rebuild that. If this rotation stays as it is right now, it's going to be extremely scary for opposing teams to come up to Rogers Center.
You know, what are some of the other roster battles that you're tracking this week, Julia, as we kind of head towards and get, you know, closer and closer? I mean, what, 6 days away from opening day for the Blue Jays? What's still kind of up in the air for you with this roster?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, that 26th roster spot is still up for grabs. I would think that Otto Lopez has the upper hand here. He has been really, really good in this preseason. He was very good for Team Canada in the World Baseball Classic as well. A versatile guy who can play multiple positions, extremely fast around the bases, and he makes contact. He puts the ball in play. That's really all you're looking for in your 26th man. And, you know, he has been in the majors before. Maybe you can say that a guy like Addison Barger or Nathan Lucas could come in and make a run for that 26th spot. But the fact is that Lopez, as the number 14 here prospect via MLB Pipeline, and a guy who's been around the major leagues before, who's been in that clubhouse before, and has put in the numbers and the success that he has in the offseason, or in the preseason, pardon me, it does seem like he has sort of the upper hand. Another thing that I'm looking at closely is just how the Blue Jays are going to tackle second base. Mm-hmm. It does seem like Santiago Espinal, who had that position on lock for most of last season, is going to come in at a platoon situation this year, maybe with Whit Merrifield and even Kevin Biggio. How does the strategy change now that the Blue Jays roster is a bit deeper than it was last year? And how are they going to utilize a guy like Santiago Espinal, who was an all-star last year, and who now may see a different role with this club? So those are the two big ones for me. I don't think that there's necessarily a roster battle when it comes to the bullpen, but I'm always very curious to see how a team sort of breaks camp when it comes to the bullpen. Nate Pearson is a guy to watch on that front, and how it plays out until the trade deadline, because that does say a lot, too, about how a contending club is going to act come the trade deadline time.
What do you think Mitch White's next couple months is going to be like? I don't think he's going to be up in the conversation for that fifth starter right away. It looks like Kikuchi has it. And I know he's dealing with maybe a little bit of a tweak himself, but Is he a guy that they're going to keep maybe in that starting position? Is there a bullpen spot maybe for Mitch White? I think that maybe that's kind of the question mark that I still have, is where and how Mitch White will be utilized.
Yeah, once he is ready to go, he's still ramping up, throwing in minor league games right now and all of that. We do expect him to take a bullpen role in sort of that long reliever position, which again is something that Pearson might be in the running for. But we all know that, you know, five starters don't a season make. It's a very, very long baseball season. Every team last year used at least eight starters throughout the 162 games. So Blue Jays rotation looks amazing on paper. These are five guys that are coming in very strong. But injuries happen, doubleheaders happen, right? There's so much in a baseball season that you can't really predict. You can prepare for, right, as much as you can. But it is a long season and it is a grind. So having a guy like Mitch White, the priority is to get him healthy and to get him back into throwing in games. And when you sort of go through that hurdle, then you have a very valuable swingman, a guy that can slide into that long relief role, but that can also get starts for you if need be. That's a very, very advantageous position to be in for the Blue Jays. And they have sort of looked for a couple of guys that can do that. Zach Thompson, Drew Hutchison. The Blue Jays have put themselves in a position in which when the time comes that they will need that number six, seven, or eight starter, they have guys right now that they can turn to.
Julie, I know you've been covering the team throughout spring training from a distance here. I feel like there's been a more serious approach this season, not only because they got rid of the home run jacket, but just listening to the players talk about the approach, the off-season goals, where they come into spring training, what they want from this season. It feels like a different vibe, and also the fact that they've added some veteran staff members, obviously Don Mattingly and James Click, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mr. Sure. Click. They added him as well. And they have, you know, they've just kind of approached this a little differently. Are you feeling the same level of severity to this season ahead?
Yeah, severity is an interesting word. I do think that everyone is maybe a little more locked in, mm-hmm. right? It's funny not to think of this Blue Jays team as a young team anymore. And that's the reality of it. The Blue Jays are not young anymore. They are ready to win. They are due for some wins, right? They're due for some things to bounce their way in a certain way. And I think that the many quotes speaking about this team's maturity, the one that really caught my eye recently was Kevin Gausman saying that, hey, the attention to detail this year is tenfold what it was last year.
That's huge.
And saying something along the lines of, you know, the way that we lost last season was very humbling. It was something that he said. And so that loss, for the players that were there for it, it's obviously going to stay in their minds. And they're obviously going to, you know, not dwell on it by any means, but learn from it. And when you're talking about attention to detail in a long season in which, you know, a handful of wins make the whole difference between being a wild card team or winning the pennant or, you know, losing a best of two or best of three series and advancing to the next round. There's so much that can be decided in the details when it comes to baseball. And hearing every player almost to a man talking about the attention to detail, that tells you a lot about where this team is in terms of maturity and their stance going into the season of what they're trying to accomplish.
There's still 162 games left to play for the Blue Jays, so obviously it's very early. We've just got spring training going on right now. But in your mind, Julia, like, what does success look like for this Blue Jays team this year? And I'm sure what that looks like and the expectation will change throughout the season. That's natural. That always happens depending on what they actually look like. But in this kind of preseason space, like, what does success look like for the Toronto Blue Jays in 23-24? Or I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
What year is it?
If you ask this team. It is Friday morning, so I won't say I blame you here. If you ask this team, the goal is the same as it was last year. It didn't work out for them last year, but the goal remains the same. It's World Series, right? It's why the Blue Jays went out and got all the guys that they performed all the, we saw the Teoscar Hernandez trade sort of kick off this whole off season, and it was a busy one. The lineup is different. It's more versatile. It's more flexible. The rotation is certainly better. The bullpen is better. Everywhere you look, the Blue Jays are better than they were last year. And if they started last year by saying that the goal was the World Series, there is no reason to believe that goal has changed. So I'm not saying that if the Blue Jays don't make the World Series, it's not going to be a successful year. Things happen. Things change. That's the nature of the game. But that is 100% what this team is going to be looking at the entire way. The big one for me is, can they win the American League East? Mm-hmm. Can the Yankees stay healthy enough to make a run for it with the Blue Jays? And I am right now looking at those two teams. I may be surprised here by the Rays or the Red Sox or even the Orioles, who are certainly also better than they were last year. But it does look like it's still a two-team race here. And if the Blue Jays can come away with that, they will be extremely well-positioned to make a deep playoff run.
Well, opening day next Thursday. We'll find out today who will be on the mound for the Toronto Blue Jays for that. Maybe Manoah, maybe Gausman, maybe Kikuchi. We'll chat with you, I'm sure, many times throughout the season, Julie. Appreciate you coming on. And get ready and get excited.
Thank you very much. Have a great weekend, everyone.
You as well. That's Julia Kreutz, Blue Jays reporter at MLB.com. And as we mentioned, the MLB is doing a league-wide rollout of the 30 opening day starters sometime today. A new approach to a little social buzz around who will be on the mound. I'd like to know at 595.90, who should it be? You want Alec Manoah out there? You want Kevin Gausman? You want the MVP of the Grapefruit League? You say Kikuchi. Where you stand? I think that the benefit of this is that you can't really go wrong, as we just talked about with Julia and Haley with me here. I think that this is an exciting year with some heightened expectations. Last year's expectations for World Series, don't know how much higher you can get for that, but a year of experience, and as we mentioned, a learning moment at the very end of that season, and, you know, that can really make a difference to a team to have a pretty brutal end to what was supposed to be a really long run. And so maybe you've learned from that. Hopefully you've grown. You've sat with that for months and you've trained and you've put that on your bulletin board. So how do you kick off this season with a little bit of something to prove? I think the Blue Jays have that, and they have the right players and the right staff for that. So I'm really excited for this Blue Jays season ahead. And we'll find out today who gets to have the honor of being on the mound for that. So stay tuned. On the other side of the break, though, we have a guy that has made it to that championship many, many times, and has hoisted the Stanley Cup three times in his career, including a Conn Smythe Award winner. It's Justin Williams, Mr. Game 7, joining us on the other side of the break. He's a special advisor to the Hurricanes GM as well, and the Leafs are playing the Canes tomorrow night, so we'll tee up that game, but we'll also talk about what it means to be a champion, and do the Maple Leafs have the right roster construction to do just that.